Good morning, Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
After 35 years, my husband and I finally bought a house, and we made it our decision to buy it in Beulah. Beulah is a beautiful place when we got there. It's changed quite a bit since 2013, and not exactly what I had in mind.
Oh my goodness, the residents of Beulah showed up in force on Thursday for the Escambia County Commission meeting to express their displeasure with the secret deal, name to be revealed later, of a potential distribution warehouse on the north edge of the OLF 8 property on 9 Mile Road west of Navy Federal. On Frank Reeder, the undisclosed name, the proposal that there'd be this giant warehouse distribution center and 18-wheelers rolling down Frank Reeder Road had a lot of residents unhappy, including Mary Mungall.
I can hear the interstate from my bedroom window, which I used to not be able to hear because the trees have come down and the houses have gone in. Okay, but I draw the line in the sand. If there's going to be a warehouse, you're not going to have a happy camper.
And that was the sentiment of a lot of folks, very upset at the county commission. I mean, you know, people are annoyed that they've been dragging their feet and turning down deals and losing deals and haven't done anything on OLF 8. And, you know, continue to promise that they'll honor the master plan. In language. In fact, even claiming that the master plan honoring is the reason they haven't done any deals yet. But then you have this project that was supposed to come in, maybe, possibly, that would be there that the only thing we know about is be a giant distribution center, which is not light industrial, which is not what the master plan had called for at all. And Teresa Blackwell, who has been the enduring, unflappable advocate for the citizens of Beulah, it's basically been Jeff Bergosh versus Teresa Blackwell. She's been in favor of what I think a lot of the citizens really want, the DPZ master plan. Jeff has always wanted to have, you know, in light industrial manufacturing on the site. You know, he hates that there's going to be housing. Everybody else thinks there needs to be some, at least a lot of housing to match with the other things that are going there. So it's basically, she's been the unofficial representative of the people of Beulah for several years now and a very, very credible person. And she says,
good evening, Teresa Blackwell. I live in Beulah. I had a speech written and I had to totally change it because I talked with Marina Curry this afternoon, and her reaction to the idea of warehouses on OLF 8, she was incredulous.
In case you don't know, Marina Curry was the person from DPZ who came and put together the master plan, and, you know, internationally known folks for doing this did a great job, and she's like, they want to do what? You got to be kidding me. It's unbelievable.
She said a distribution warehouse would violate the whole intent of light industrial. Light industrial is supposed to contain everything within those walls. Trucks are not contained. Trucks have noise. They give out pollution. They will disturb the neighborhood. That is not light industrial. So that right there violates our master plan.
And I mean, she went, this is actually, you know, Teresa has been very diplomatic, but of course the commissioners have slow walked the best possible so far plan that had been brought to them by Fred Hemmer. And they were working with Fred Hemmer. And now all of a sudden, you know, Fred's not the popular child anymore. And we'll see if his plan persists or not. And what else might happen. A lot of folks speculate that the reason Fred Hemmer has been getting the unloved treatment is because he supported Doug Underhill in the past, and they are nothing if not vindictive at this county commission, and they will never, ever, ever forgive somebody for supporting Doug Underhill. Is that the reason? I don't know. They don't come out and say it, and we don't really get the text messages anymore. You know what I'm saying? So it's hard to read between the lines. But anyway, Teresa continues with criticizing this warehouse plan.
The whole intent with this parcel was to create higher paying jobs. Warehouse jobs are not higher paying jobs. They would not meet the requirements of the Triumph grant. It would not be transformational, except in a bad way, for this neighborhood.
And so, you know, Marina Corey asks, what is the purpose of putting a warehouse distribution center up there?
Marina was, what is the motivation? Why would you even think about building warehouses on OLF 8? If you insist on doing that, she said at the least it would need to be next to Navy Federal and highly buffered, and their exit would be limited to 9 Mile Road.
Teresa, that's your time.
And one last shot she threw in, which I thought was kind of the best of the night, actually.
OLF 8 is the project of the century for this county, and you have no idea the actual value of the land or how to go about getting it developed.
Teresa, thank you.
So bring back Peter Bozzelli. Right. Thank you.
Next speaker is Peter Bolton. Please don't applaud. We have a lot of speakers. We're trying to be respectful of everyone.
Yeah, this solid 3.3 seconds worth of applause is killing the decorum for the night, Commissioner Barry. He just doesn't like participation by the audience much. He's a very, you know, straight and narrow and do it proper and don't ask people to raise their hands or any of that kind of stuff. It's I always contrast the tone of, say, Santa Rosa County and Escambia County Commission meetings. Or, you know, God forbid, Milton. I get why people don't like the somewhat raucous nature of what happens in Santa Rosa County. But the alternative is, you know, kind of stifling people and telling them to shush and, you know, limiting their time. I mean, there was, where was the guy? Is this the one? Yeah, this is Peter Bolton was another person who spoke, and I'll give him his full comments here, and then you'll see at the end what I mean about, you know, kind of stifling conversation.
Just listening to what's been set up till now, we have multiple school buses dedicated to a single road we're about to put 18-wheelers on. That's ridiculous. There should be schools on that property. With the residential growth, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, there should be schools on that property. There should also be a firehouse on that property. If you look at an overhead map of where the firehouse should be, it should not be the one on West 9 Mile Road. That one makes no sense at all. Jeff Bergosh knows it. He knows this. If you look at the map, that current, it's not even open yet, by the way. I don't know why we did a ribbon cutting on a facility that's not open. That's amazing. In an election year, is it amazing? Or is it exactly what you would expect? You know, you do the math. But no, there should absolutely be a fire station on OLF 8, especially when you're building all this stuff around it, and it's going to be a massive development. Fire station. It's better located by far than the one we actually did build. And why did it happen? Well, there's lots of reasons, I'll tell you that. Let's just say it's good when you support a commissioner because he'll take care of you. And it's bad when you don't support a commissioner because he'll take care of you. You know, that's been the practice. Anyway, Peter Bolton, back to talking about the mystery bidder status of this project.
The current proposed plan calls for most of the land developed to be committed to light industrial and a major distribution center. And here we have the mystery, a mystery bidder for parts or possibly all the proposal. How's that possible? This is a publicly owned land being developed by publicly elected officials, and the public that elected them is being kept in the dark. Why can't we be an informed public and know how our tax dollars are being spent, who they're going to, what are they doing with our money?
Now, I will give the commission and Florida West just a little bit of cover on this because it's very normal. I mean, you see it in Santa Rosa County, see the same thing where these companies come in with their, you know, non-disclosure agreements and their code names for these projects because, you know, they don't want their competitors to know. They may not want their own people to know sometimes, and people want to explore with the freedom and not have to have it be publicized. I actually get that. But the problem is, what does it do for a community that does not trust these commissioners, that thinks that they're always getting, you know, misdirected or lied to, or that something's going to suddenly pop up and it's going to be a horrible thing because they weren't able to oppose it early enough because it was under a non-disclosure or non-anonymity agreement? And that's the problem, is that the commission has built so much distrust with the community over the years that they don't believe them, and that's why the complaints about the anonymity, especially when it comes on the heels of learning that it's going to be a distribution warehouse and that that is in violation of the master plan and that that is going to throw semis on Frank Reeder Road next to the school buses and totally disrupt that very rural character kind of community.
If this proposal or any future proposal is contingent on a non-disclosure, I even challenge this board to decline those bidders. It's not in the taxpayers' best interest. It's in somebody else's. The question you have to ask is, whose best interest does a mystery agreement serve? It can't be the taxpayer because we're in the dark by design.
And it's sort of just trust us. Everything's going to be fantastic. And like I said, he had the kind of the best, interaction with Stephen at the end here about, you know, how much are they really willing to listen. There's a lot of discretion about how much time you give people to talk. 3 minutes is one standard, I think, is kind of being the default standard. They've, depending on who you ask, they either changed the rules or they kept longer rules in place that it would be 2 minutes unless. But in this case, you had so many people getting told to stop talking that it shows why 3 minutes is really kind of the right minimum that you need for the public. The average person in the public, they're not skilled at putting their answers and commentary into a two-minute package. 3 minutes is really better. So he kept having to tell everybody, okay, you're done, okay, you're done, okay, you're done, instead of just, you know, spend an extra 15 minutes and listen to the people at a little bit more length.
Every agreement takes at least two parties.
Right. Mr. Bolton.
So who are the other bidders?
Thank you.
And my 2 minutes are
yes,
up?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Boy, we have a lot more to say tonight, but you are certainly not willing to listen to us.
Thank you, Mr.
I know
Bolton.
We're limited by time, but
thank you, Mr.
it's
Bolton.
Not fair to us.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Just, you know, one of the things, you know, there's not a lot of things that I hear James Calkins say that I'm like, you're right. One of the things I actually appreciate about him is that, you know, he has consistently maintained, I'll stay here all night if we have to listen to the public. Now, I think that that leads to absurd conclusions, giving people time to come up again and again and again and 4 minutes and all of this. But the other end of the spectrum is, you know, no, I'm a busy man. 2 minutes, you're done. Yeah, and that's what we see with Escambia County, in particular the chairmanship of Stephen Berry. So the people were very, 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 very upset about this prospect. Now, for his part, you had Commissioner Bergosh says that he is not going to vote for anything that's going to be disruptive of the master plan. And, you know, here was his statement after everybody else had had all of their, you know, complaining about the project.
What's going to happen is we're going to follow the master plan, and you're going to see I'm not going to build anything for my vote. Look, I'm one guy of four, five after the election. I'm not going to vote for it. I'm not going to vote for anything that doesn't comport to the master plan. 23 feet, not 55 feet. Just remember that. 23 feet, not 55 feet with full setbacks. And that pretty much guarantees for my vote that they're not coming. And the same company is looking at other property. This is one of many properties they're looking at. So I know everyone's upset. I am too. Would not have been the first company I chose. It wouldn't have been. But it's a great company, and it is a great opportunity. I only wish I could tell you who they are. But know this. There's two companies behind them that are fantastic. It's moving, and it's coming, and you guys are going to love it.
I will say the jab of the night came from did I not write down the name of this person? Sorry, I don't have it for you. But this was the jab of the night against, again, Commissioner Bergosh, who that's his district, right? And he's kind of been the commission's spokesperson on OLF 8 matters for all these years.
We don't need a warehouse in Beulah. We've got car washes. We've got storage units. We've got all kinds of new subdivisions, which is great. I'm all for progress. In fact, we'd rather have residential homes in there rather than a warehouse. That's not going to, bring our value of our property down. But if you're going to put a warehouse there, I would suggest putting it on the south side, maybe across from Nature Trail. And that way, we wouldn't have to deal with the truck.
Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Gibson. Context, Jeff lives across the street. Now, not in Nature Trail, okay? I've been told many times he lives like sort of right next door, this little subdivision right next door. But that's what that was about. That was a, you know, hey, Commissioner, if you think this is such a good deal, then why don't you build it across from your house instead of across from our house? That's why everybody was laughing at that Nature Trail across 9 Mile comment. 5:23 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. And, you know, Frontier Motors has got a great selection of good quality used cars, cars that are a year, two, maybe 3 years old with low miles that are in great condition. And I say it all the time, but, you know, I think of them as the opposite of the typical used car dealership. You know, typically you go to a used car place and they've got, you know, a handful of cars of a variety of qualities. And what they're hoping is that you'll come and you'll buy something, they can get rid of something, you know, and then you won't come back on them. The Frontier wants you to come back on them, not because there's a problem, but because you're so happy. And as a way of making that happen, like to come back in 5 years and buy another car, or in 10 years and buy another car, or, you know, whatever your time frame is for buying cars. Some people like to get a newer used car every 3 or 4 years. I like to get a newer used car every 20 years. You know, that's just, everybody has their different way. But the point is that Frontier specializes and only really sells cars that they know you're going to be able to trust and be able to use for a long time. Dave Ramsey type cars, you know, drive them and run them into the ground. And so they're interested in the long game. They think you're going to be here a while. They're going to be here a while. Why not provide you all the cars you're ever going to buy for the rest of your life? You, your family, your kids, your friends. Like that, and that's how I look at them. I don't know why I would go anywhere else because we had such a non-typical experience buying a good quality used car from them, you know, as opposed to everywhere else that I've ever either tried to or actually bought from. Frontier Motors, serving the Pensacola community for more than 25 years. Behind the Big Buffalo on Beverly Parkway, be sure to tell them Andrew McKay says hi.
Our daughter Jessie loves playing detective.
But since we discovered she has sensitive skin, we've been playing detective too.
We thought the problem was our puppy.
But it was actually our old detergent. So we switched to Tide Free and Gentle.
Tide Free and Gentle has no dyes or perfumes, so it's gentle on her skin.
If it's gotta be clean, it's gotta be Tide Free and Gentle. This back to school season, Tide and Downy are giving back with $1.5 million in scholarships. Enter to win. No purchase necessary. US/TC17+. End September 30th. Rules. Tide.com/scholarship/official rules.
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my side softer?
Can I make my side firmer whenever I want?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that. Cools up to 8 times faster and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side. 94% of Sleep Number smart sleepers report better sleep. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, during our biggest sale of the year, save 50% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed. Limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. To find a store near you, visit sleepnumber.com.
DeFranco Gas is your local expert in all things gas. Local Tom DeFranco and Company has been installing and servicing your gas power business and home needs for over 38 years and is here to help make your gas life easier. Tankless water heaters, gas grills, gas fireplaces, gas heating systems, and DeFranco Gas gets your home and business storm ready with installation and servicing of whole generator systems. All things gas. DeFranco Gas, your local gas service provider. Member of the Better Business Bureau. DeFrancoGas.com.
As a business owner, you have a lot on your plate, from managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, remitting state and federal taxes, helping with COVID employee retention credits, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and their HR expertise. Avalon HR lets you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Avalon HR, employing made easy.
The Port of Pensacola is more than just a name. It's a powerhouse of economic opportunities, a strategic location that sparks growth and prosperity, contributing significantly to the local and regional economy with 23 incredible businesses that call this port home. Big names like C-Max Materials, GE Wind Energy, and soon the prestigious American Magic Sailing Team. Since 1754, the Port of Pensacola has been the driving force behind Northwest Florida's economic success. Explore more at portofpensacola.com.
When you listen to News Radio 92.3 on Sundays, you get Christian Outlook at 7, Ask the Preacher at 8, Town Hall Review, Fox News Sundays a Weekend, Tech It Out, and Gun Talk at 8.
Fine! The gloves are off, pal! Come on, let me see a little wrath. Smite me, oh mighty smiter!
Good morning, 528 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's a Pensacola Morning News, and kind of a cool day coming up. We got a lot of things going on the show, but something that's a little bit different is Mayor D.C. Reeves is going to be here in studio for an hour from 7:30 to 8:30, taking all your questions and comments about parking. It ought to be fun. He's normally on at 7:30, and he had said, look, Andrew, let's just do a thing. Let's get it all out in the open. This is the thing that people are talking about, complaining about, upset about, and don't understand. Let's talk about it. So 7:30, 8:30, entirely devoted to parking downtown. He will take all of your, if you want to call and yell at him or ask him questions, you're welcome to. He'll take it. It's a radio town hall this morning from 7:30 to 8:30. Steve is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. Steve?
Well, good morning. Kamala Harris and her running mate, Tim Walz, are kicking off a campaign tour of battleground states. The Minnesota governor appeared alongside Harris for the ticket's first joint rally in Philadelphia yesterday. Walz is a former teacher, congressman, and military veteran. Republicans are launching an investigation into Vice President Kamala Harris's handling of the southern border. The House Oversight Committee is demanding Customs and Border Protection turn over any internal communications with the vice president's office related to illegal immigration. Committee Chairman James Comer said the committee wants to understand Harris's role in what he called, and we quote, the worst border crisis in American history, unquote. And it looks like Missouri progressive Cori Bush has lost her House seat against Democratic challenger, a St. Louis County prosecutor, Wesley Bell. You see, the race was highlighting the divides in the Democratic Party over the Israel-Hamas war, as Bush has taken a strong stance against Israel's military campaign in Gaza. And that's what's happening.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you called the Kamala Harris-Tim Walz a joint rally since he legalized marijuana in Minnesota.
Far out, man.
I think you didn't mean it, but it was clever anyway.
Well.
Yeah, you know, we're getting to know more about him, and oh, there's good sound clips. You know, I will say this. The one thing I will say for Tim Walz, just as it unrelated to his qualifications or his politics, he's entertaining.
Yeah.
He's entertaining. And the debate with him and J.D. Vance, that'd be fascinating.
It'll be
good.
He
is a much more compelling and stronger speaker in public than Kamala Harris is. And this is actually what I wondered about is, you know, not picking somebody as a running mate who might upstage you. And I think that's a real risk with him.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. Vice President Harris campaigns with a running mate, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz, in Wisconsin and Michigan today. He says at a rally in Philadelphia, former President Trump knows nothing about service.
He doesn't have time for it because he's too busy serving himself.
Trump running mate J.D. Vance tells Fox the choice shows Harris has bent the knee to the far left.
He's a really far left candidate. He's a really far left governor. But the fact that Kamala Harris selected him, I think, shows really, really poor judgment, and that she doesn't have what it takes to be president of the United States.
He campaigns in the same cities as them today. Missouri House Democrat Cori Bush is the second member of the progressive squad to lose a primary this year. St. Louis County Prosecutor Wesley Bell was supported by the American-Israel Public Affairs Committee, considering Bush to be anti-Israel. She says all they did was radicalize her.
AIPAC, I'm coming to tear your kingdom down!
America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 5:31, 81 degrees right now and clear. I'm Steve Taylor for News Radio 92.3. Florida Governor Ron DeSantis was in Steinhatchee yesterday and gave an update on the damage done by Hurricane Debbie, which made a direct hit there as a Category 1 storm.
We have currently, as of this morning, 110,600 Floridians that are without power. That's about 37,000 from private companies, 71,000 from electrical co-ops.
He says there were National Guard troops there on the ground surveying the damage, as the area is still cleaning up from Hurricane Idalia. That came through last August as a Category 3 storm. The Florida Small Business Emergency Loan Bridge Program has been activated with $10 million available for businesses impacted by Debbie. Well, Patrick Emanuel, one of the namesakes of the law firm Emanuel, Shepherd & Condon, has passed away at the age of 104 years old. He grew up in Cottage Hill in North Escambia. He was born in Pensacola way back on January 25, 1920, and grew up in Cottage Hill, attended a two-room schoolhouse in the Cottage Hill area called the Cottage Hill Grammar School. And it looks like throughout his life, he was extensively involved in civic activities in the Pensacola community. At the 43rd Annual PACE Awards back in 2002, the Pensacola Chamber of Commerce gave Patrick the Spirit of Pensacola Award. The combined Rotary Clubs of Pensacola and the UWF College of Business awarded Patrick the Ethics in Business Award back in 2004. Well, looks like residents near Eglin Air Force Base will soon experience some nightly aircraft noise as night flying operations will begin next week. According to an Eglin Air Force Base news release, night flying operations will be conducted by the 58th Fighter Squadron from August 12th through the 14th. Officials are explaining the missions are scheduled to happen between 8 and 10 p.m. during that time. They say night flying is required for the 58th FS training operations. Let's check the forecast from Channel 3 to see if this warm weather will continue.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first morning weather update. Another extremely hot day today with a high near 99 degrees, 10% chance of a stray sprinkle, otherwise mostly sunny skies. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 80 degrees. For Thursday, another hot day with a high near 98, 10% chance of a stray shower. Thursday night, temperatures dropping near 80 degrees. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Morning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Morning Weather Center.
Right now, it's 81 in Pensacola, 80 in Gulf Breeze, and 81 in Milton at 534. Next news happens at 6, breaking news anytime. I'm Steve Taylor for News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Elon Musk's social media platform X has sued a group of advertisers, alleging that a massive advertiser boycott deprived the company of billions of dollars in revenue and violated antitrust laws. It accused the advertising group's brand safety initiative, called the Global Alliance for Responsible Media, of helping to coordinate a pause in advertising after Musk bought Twitter for $44 billion in late 2022 and overhauled its staff and policies. During a two-day hearing that continues today, federal aviation safety officials have pressed Boeing executives for answers about what caused the mid-flight blowout in January. National Transportation Safety Board officials have also released transcripts of interviews with Boeing employees in which they describe the process of building the 737 MAX aircraft as chaos. Futures are moderately higher as Wall Street rebounds from Monday's global stock sell-off. Tuesday, the Dow Industrials gained 294. That's your money now.
Climatech, Climatech, heating and cooling is what we know. Call 857-4700.
Hello again, everybody. Travis Thompson here with Climatech of Professional Air, your independently owned American Standard heating and air conditioning dealer. Summer is almost here, and that means a lot of us will experience air conditioning issues. If you happen to need a new comfort system, we'd like to announce the very best opportunity that we've ever been able to offer to our customers. For a limited time, every system we sell qualifies for an instant rebate. Our high-efficiency systems qualify for instant rebates up to $4,000, and with tax incentives available, your savings could amount to as much as $6,000. This is without a doubt the best opportunity we've ever been able to offer. So give me a call to learn more or visit our website at climatechproair.com.
Climatech, Climatech, heating and cooling is what we know. Call 857-4700.
Hi, this is Earl Ron. At New South Window, we bring the factory to you. Our windows and doors are made with quality in mind, and your products and insulation are backed by our lifetime warranty. That's because New South Window knows the importance of single source accountability. We believe in removing the middleman so you get more for your money. This is real factory direct. One company, one call, guaranteed for life. Get New South proud.
For a limited time only, when you buy more, you can save more. Visit NewSouthWindow.com to learn more.
Hi, I'm Tappy Villain. With 24 years of experience serving the voters of Santa Rosa County, I am seeking another term. Having successfully been a part of 44 elections, 3 statewide, 2 countywide, and 2 municipal recounts, I am the only candidate for Supervisor of Elections with actual experience administering elections. Continue the tradition of successful elections in Santa Rosa County and remember the name, vote Tappy Villain on August 20th. Paid by Tappy Villain Republican for Supervisor of Elections.
Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay.
Joining me here in studio today, we have Chief Deputy Tommy Leiter for the Escambia County Sheriff's Office, former PPD Chief. Chief, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, thanks for having me.
It's kind of been quiet this week.
And it's not necessarily newsworthy. We made some great narcotics arrests, traffic stop narcotics arrests, but that's just a small fraction of what we're going on. There's 721 employees, 430.
Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay. Mornings 5 till 9. News Radio Pensacola.
Informative, local, dependable.
Good morning, 538 here on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News, and yesterday we had a chance to talk to Escambia Sheriff Chip Simmons. We actually thought this wasn't going to happen because we had had a different thing scheduled, and then it fell through, and then he had also a different thing scheduled, and it fell through. So we were both each other's backup dates yesterday, and it worked out perfectly. So, Sheriff, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. How you doing?
I'm doing great, doing good. Let's start with probably the most unpleasant from your agency's point of view story. That this is the kind of stuff you have to deal with sometimes. You have a deputy that you had to terminate over some child cruelty allegations. Is that right?
Yeah, we got a report that there were some mistreatment of some of the children of one of our former deputies, I'm proud to say. And when we did the investigation, we determined that we had probable cause to believe that he committed a child cruelty, child neglect, and then failure to require school attendance, which is a homeschool type environment.
Okay.
So we arrested him and his wife also. So, you know, we don't tolerate that from anyone, and we certainly don't tolerate that from deputies. So I fired him immediately.
Can I just pause for a second, because it's stuck in my head, because we're homeschoolers, right?
Mm-hmm.
You say it was a homeschool,
right?
But it was a truancy thing as well, like they claimed to be homeschooling but weren't actually doing it or something, or?
Right? There are still some requirements in homeschool,
sure.
that you have to get,
yeah,
you know, to get completion, and they weren't doing that.
Okay.
There was some what we believe was mistreatment, you know, some dental needs and some different things that we felt like they weren't. They weren't doing.
So this is a variation on parental neglect of some sort, parental abuse of some sort. That
I think it boils down to you have a duty to care for your children,
yeah,
in a responsible way. And while we understand and we will take into account, people have differences of opinion. Some people choose to homeschool. Some people, mm-hmm, choose not to vaccinate. Two vaccines a day. That's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about what we felt like was a violation of the law.
And this is, you know, not to get too deep on all this, but this is a case where this individual was otherwise a good officer, just this came to light, or, I mean, you know, we know that can happen, but.
Right, yeah, there's been no discipline issues with,
okay,
with this particular deputy, no. He,
okay,
was working assigned to the courthouse.
But obviously, you're not going to, as you say, not going to tolerate that on the force, obviously, so. Had a couple of incidents that took place. This is one that it was a little while ago, but I had wanted to talk with you about this. Your officers, your deputies had come in to clean up Jones Swamp. A lot of people were squatting. Homeless people were kind of camping out in there. And that had been an ongoing activity in partnership with the county and code enforcement, if I'm not mistaken. Is that right?
And the owners of the property.
And the owners,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. Area Housing Commission owns the property.
Okay.
Yeah, and I've long said, if you own a piece of property and you want someone off, you can call us and we will remove them. The issue,
I mean, that's just trespassing.
That's trespassing, yeah. It's like you call me to your house and maybe, well, I wouldn't call me, but I'll certainly help out if I can. But if you have someone on your property that you want removed, then we will remove them. And so we had a meeting with county officials, code enforcement officials, had meetings with area housing, and it was clear that they wanted these people off. So they identified those who had been there for a long period of time, mm-hmm, that were, I guess you call them squatters, but they felt like they had to go through the court system, and we all agreed that if you go through the court system, get them an eviction notice, we will certainly be there and we'll take care of it. So notices were given, a couple of days advance notice. There were notices posted, made contact with these people, and told them when we're going to be there. And fortunately, they all left and we didn't have to make any arrests.
Okay, so I'm just to be clear, this was not in structures per se. This was on, like, in Jones Swamp. I mean, it was
forest, woods
area. Okay.
Yeah, well, it was makeshift structures, but it was,
gotcha,
it was in the woods.
Okay. When you said eviction notices, I wasn't sure. It,
right,
wasn't,
but
like
we felt like
housing,
because they had allowed them to stay there for so long, they had knowledge of them being there.
Okay.
They were actually giving them, you know, food and that sort of thing.
Okay.
That you should have
a legal,
you know,
process,
the court system. And get them the notices, and again, it made it cleaner and easier for all of us. And it certainly was easier, and it did work.
How does that work in Florida? I know every state's a little bit different, but, you know, if you stay in a place long enough, eventually you start to acquire, you know, residency rights just by term of occupation, even if you don't own the structure, even if you don't own the land. How does that work? Because I really don't know.
It is very tricky. It requires a lot of assessment on the owners and law enforcement's part. We had a lot of conversations with these extended stay hotels about how long is too long, and,
mm-hmm,
and we look at things like, do you get mail there, and you know, have you established a residence there? Do you claim that as your residence on employment records and that sort of thing?
Yeah.
But for the most part, if you allow someone to stay. Certainly, maybe a former renter, mm-hmm, was renting a room from you, and then they chose not to rent, not to pay rent anymore. You will have to go through the eviction notice to get them out, much like property owners would on renters. And it's really that simple. If they are allowed to stay there and are given certain, you know, rights of ownership, of occupancy, I, mm-hmm, should say, then yeah, you need to get them, go through the courts and get them evicted. It takes, I don't know how much it costs. I don't think it's very much. It does take a couple of days. We get the notices. We go and post it on the door, mm-hmm, and usually we give them 3 days to vacate.
So the more you treat them as if they are allowed to be there, the more you have to go through a process in order to remove them. Basically.
That's correct. We had, okay, one recently where some people were I think the homeowner passed away, and the children were there, and the children wanted someone that was in the back, an outlying building that the previous owner, you know, the deceased had let them stay in. And we went through a lot of problems with that. But ultimately, we had to determine who owns the property now, and then who has the right to get them to leave and get this eviction notice.
We also had last Tuesday, I believe, there was a, I mean, I guess somewhat minor, but gunfire involved in a road rage incident, right?
Yeah, as I understand it, someone cut one person off, and then an individual came out of their car and fired a gun and shot the tire out, and I think shot a couple of rounds into the vehicle.
Oh, so, God.
Luckily, no one was injured, no one was hurt, but again, it's just crazy that someone would do that, that would think to do that over a cutoff somewhat or a perceived slight on the roadway.
This is maybe a bit of a side note here, but it's the kind of thing that people might have a misconception about. You watch TV and people hide behind their cars in a gunfight. Mm-hmm. Car's not going to do a lot to stop a bullet typically. So you firing into another car is very, very, very dangerous.
And that's what we call it. There's a statute called firing deadly missiles into an occupied vehicle. That's how dangerous it could be. Mm-hmm. My understanding is he was firing at the tire and then he hit around the tire. So he hit the fender well.
Okay, gotcha.
Otherwise, we probably would have charged, or we would have termed this as an attempted homicide, or an aggravated assault at least. So, if you try to shoot into a car while someone's in it, we're going to charge you with attempt. You could try to kill somebody,
right?
Like you just said, the window clearly will not stop a bullet, and the door frames now. I don't think the metal's made near what it used to be, and the rounds that people fire now are have a little more penetrating power.
Blunt Street, I think we had a stabbing. Two people maybe were at a hospital as a result of it.
Yeah, I talked to the investigators yesterday, and they just couldn't believe what happened here. This was a disturbance of some sort, and then a man went, retrieved a knife and came back and attacked one from behind, as I understand
it. God.
Cut him twice around the neck area, and then there were people trying to break it up, trying to hold him back, and a female got stabbed as well. So clearly intended to do great bodily harm or death to these two individuals. So we're again, charging him with the attempted murder. And again, as I talked to the investigators, they're like, this guy clearly tried to kill them. Or we believe he tried to kill these two people.
Well, good for the bystanders for getting involved. I mean, that's a scary situation and trying to protect somebody. I mean, that's, you know, good civics, but scary because, you know, a knife fight is a knife fight, you know?
Yeah. Knife fights aren't as common as they were in 1800, I guess.
Yeah.
But we still have them occasionally. And just how horrific would that be? You find yourself, you know, being attacked or stabbed by an individual, not just stabbed but cut. I mean, the cuts were there were stab wounds, obviously, but there were also some
well, hospitalization,
some slashing,
right?
Type
life-threatening.
Cuts. Oh, absolutely, hospitalization.
Hey, I had wanted to also ask you. We talked with Sheriff Johnson about this a little bit yesterday, but you know, you and I have talked many times about the assassination attempt on President Trump, Secret mm-hmm. Service. I was dumbfounded to watch the Secret Service hearing last week where he clearly was blaming the SWAT team for actually doing what they had been told to do. He's changed his tone a little bit on Saturday to a briefing where he said, I'm not blaming local law enforcement. But look, President Trump is going to come here most likely for some kind of a rally. Maybe, you know, Vice President Harris comes here for a rally. You guys are going to have to work with Secret Service again in the future. What do comments like that do for your officers' willingness to work with them and your agency being willing to work with them if they get thrown under the bus like that?
Yeah, first of all, getting thrown under the bus ain't cool. Yeah, that's not the way it should be. I think that what you have to realize or what I understand is that typically no one comes into our counties, our locations, and tells us how to do a SWAT thing. But we also understand that a dignitary of this nature, certainly a presidential candidate or the president, we also have to work with the Secret Service. I've talked to you before about all the planning that goes in with the advanced teams and then the teams that come later. And we need to know where they're going to be. Are you going to be on this building? And they'll say, yeah, we'll take care of this one, but our holes are here, here, and here. And then we, as a partner, will say, okay, we'll take care of those particular holes. But to blame local law enforcement in that scenario, if they come in here and say, we only have holes here and here, and if y'all could cover that, and if we cover that, then we're good. But if you screw it up on the beginning or you're not clear on what your plans are, that's on you, mister. There's no, don't look at us and point fingers at us. I would imagine that their security is enhanced, obviously. And I imagine that the protocols that they had in place before, the cooperation that they've had in the past is probably even enhanced, because a lot more questions probably being asked by the locals. So there is no miscommunication on all this stuff. I was talking to a former sheriff, and they talked about it too, about how much money it costs locals for, and I limit this as well, that there are, they come into town, they visit, they require all this extra overtime and stuff. They don't pay you a dime. And you know, but the thing is, I don't want nothing to happen on my watch. So
right.
We make sure we have the proper, what we think is a proper security. But again, we're not the ones that say, okay, we're going to take care of this, Secret Service. I want you to get back and stay in the room. We'll cover the president.
Yeah.
That's not, no one rational thinks that that's the way it works out. We expect, and I expect, the Secret Service to have a take charge mentality of, we have to protect this guy. In fact, that's the way it's been.
Right.
Quite frankly, they have asked us to do things. I'm like, do you really need that? But if you want it, we'll go ahead and do it, because we don't want to be the ones that are at fault. So I find it surprising and shocking that the Secret Service would say, oh, the locals must have messed this up, because they have always been, if anything, they've been overprotective about it because they can.
Right.
They say, hey, again, we talked about it before, but the president it flew into NAS and went all the way to Civic Center. And they asked us to block every roadway from the Civic Center always to NAS and back. And that took a tremendous amount of manpower. And for hours before it started, we didn't want to do that. We didn't want to. But we did it because we thought, you know what, let's make sure that nothing happens. We don't want a Dallas situation.
You don't want any regret later.
Right. Yeah. And so we did it, and we made some people upset, you know, about the roadways being closed. But again, this is the president, and we did what we were asked to do.
Last thing is, it's not in our area, but we did have a deputy that was killed on Friday in an ambush at a home, three suspects in Lake County, Deputy Bradley Michael Link. And he's 28 years old and, you know, a hero, but it's a reminder of the dangers that your officers face, especially when, you know, the worry that you're getting called into a situation where you're the target instead of something else, you know?
There are so many opportunities that, quite frankly, that deputies and police officers can be targeted. I mean, because we go to so many calls. We handle 300,000+ calls for service a year, and you never know which one of those is going to be this type of a call. That scenario, as I understand it, was a disturbance, and then when it got to that disturbance, they pointed him to a different house. And then when it went to that different house, they noticed there was a door kicked in, that sort of thing. So they did what you would expect. You know, you hear a disturbance going on, you see a door kicked in, someone sounds like they're in distress. I think that's a hard part about being in law enforcement. You have to determine whether you knock, do you wait, do you go inside.
Right.
But, you know, and so you always err on the side of saving lives. And they did their job. They did that to a hail of gunfire. And it's just I guess when the details come out, we'll know a little bit more. But listening to the sheriff in Lake County talking about it, obviously it's a very, very raw and very sensitive situation, because they lost one of their deputies and two others were hospitalized with serious injuries. And they're still piecing that together. So the Florida Department of Law Enforcement, as they do here, is looking into that officer-involved shooting. And it's just going to be I'm a great interest to me, because we always take these situations.
They're
and
learning
we train
opportunities,
with those. And we say, okay, what if this were to happen here? What could you have done? And there may not be anything you could do, because the job itself is dangerous and you put yourself in harm's way every day.
I said last, but there is actually one. Do you have any deputies that you deployed for the hurricane, sent over for the storms, either ahead of or after the fact? Anybody go from the Scammy Sheriff's Office for Debbie?
No, the way this works is the state EOC requests people's assistance. They put out feelers and requests, does anyone have this particular thing? So, and if we don't get reimbursed for that. So, and what you don't want is for people to just show up.
Right.
And know, we know where to go, we know where to work. We've had that back in Ivan. We had people just showing up, and
why are you here?
We're doing here. We can't feed you. There's 50 people here. We can't house you. Yeah. We can't feed you. And we have no job for you to do. But the bottom line is, we haven't been requested yet. And at this point, it doesn't look like we're going to be requested. It was a Category 1. I'm not saying making light of it. We've been through plenty of Category 1s. And you suffer through those. But we have not yet been requested. But anytime the state EOC requests our assistance, we will go.
Very good. Chip Simmons is the sheriff for Escambia County. Always stops by on a Tuesday and
helps keep us informed. Thank you so much for the time. Thanks for doing what you do to keep us safe, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon.
You bet. Y'all take care.
Absolutely. 5:54 here on News Radio 92.3. If you've got a nice import, a Porsche, a Mercedes, a BMW, a Jaguar, a Genesis, Audi, Lexus, you know, these are cars that you pay a little extra to get. You might think it's a very natural thing to think that you've got to take them to the dealership to get them serviced because only the dealership can possibly know those cars. Not so. And actually, because of bad practices back in the day where, you know, dealerships try to, you know, basically tell you you couldn't go anywhere else to get your service, there's a federal law on the books for decades now that says you are allowed to go anywhere for service. And in fact, for these kind of cars, Bobby Likas works on these cars all the time. No problem. They work on them locally, you know, on Davis Highway or now on US 29 with their second location. And, you know, people don't have to drive to Destin for Destin Porsche or Mobile or wherever across the water, you know, over the river and through the woods to grandmother's dealership. You don't have to go. You can just take it right here, you know, locally. Save your money, save your time, save your gas, and get it done right at Bobby Likas Auto Service. Domestics, too, of course. You know, they don't only handle imports. They also handle domestics. You can take your Ford and your Chevy to them. Also, if you've got a diesel engine. That's something you might think is a specialty item. Nope, that's something they work. I mean, it is a little bit, but they work on those too, no problem. CarClinicService.com is the website. You can get more information about them and their history and, you know, read reviews and things like that. But the philosophy is kind of written into that name. It's like a healthcare clinic for your car where they want to see it before it's a problem, you know, see you for that routine scheduled maintenance. Like you go to the doctor every once in a while, you should go to the Bobby Likas every once in a while. That'll prevent the big things. That's the idea. Bobby Likas Auto Service right here on Davis Highway. And now a second location just opened on US 29 across from the Walmart on North Pensacola Boulevard.
Hello, I'm Rhett Rowell, a lifelong Santa Rosa County resident, and I'm a candidate for Santa Rosa County Commission, District 3. I'm running because Santa Rosa has real problems affecting you every day, including traffic congestion and improper drainage. We can do better. Santa Rosa County needs a unifier, and I am that voice. I would be humbled to receive your vote. From sand to soil across our great county, I will be your common sense conservative commissioner that you will be proud of. Please visit RhettRowell.com to learn more.
Paid for and approved by Rhett Rowell, Santa Rosa County Commission.
Veris Health Partners knows there are plenty of options when it comes to insurance. Owners Pam and Keith Giles will help guide you to choose the best plans for you and your family. As a veteran-owned independent health and life agency in Pensacola, their clients range from moms and dads on Medicare to individuals, families, business owners, and veterans who are looking for answers. They are researchers, educators, and advocates who take pride in guiding clients to become smart healthcare shoppers. Contact them at verishp.com. Veris Health Partners.
Join the Great Southern Restaurant Group, home to the Fish House, Atlas Oyster House, Jackson's, Angelina's, and Five Sisters, today on the Pensacola Expert Panel at 9. They'll be discussing Great Southern Summer Restaurant Week, Jackson's and Julia, Atlas Beverage Class, Atlas Oyster House Brother Fox Collaboration Dinner, cooking classes at Jackson's, and 75-cent Oyster Night at Atlas, today at 9.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions, 850-437-6620.
My name is Rich Holsnick, and I'm a candidate for Escambia County School Board District 4. I'm running for our children to protect their innocence and to get back to educational basics without indoctrination. We also need to retain good teachers. I'm a Naval Academy grad, a 28-year combat vet, and Desert Storm Task Group commander and pilot. Children are our hope and future. I will defend them as I did our nation. Vote Rich in the August 20 primary.
Paid by Rich Holsnack, candidate for Escambia County School Board, District 4.
Don't wait until it's too late. Tune in to News Radio Pensacola for the latest hurricane coverage on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
What's wrong?
It's wrong? It's wrong? The eye!
The eye!
The eye!
Oh, no! Where's the eye?
Okay, John, I gotta ask you. I couldn't have asked Austin. He's way too young. But, you know, you're old enough to know.
Right.
Did you recognize that sound clip?
I did, but I'm trying to place it somewhere. I've heard it.
There's a mechanical owl flying around in the background. You got it?
You're not helping me.
Oh, and Medusa? And Kraken? And Winged Horse?
Okay, I've heard the clip.
It's Clash of the Titans.
Oh.
It's the Oracles.
Right.
With the eye that they would have to share around, you know, and Harry Hamlin throws it, you know.
I can put that somewhere, but I just didn't know where.
I know. I sometimes, you know, I always
like the little sound clips that I use before the music come in a wide variety of recognition level. Mm-hmm. And I sometimes put them in there. I'm like, that's for the one person. That's all that is. Steve Taylor's in the newsroom this morning with a quick headlines for us. Steve?
Well, good morning. A federal appeals court is upholding a Maryland ban on assault rifles. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the Fourth Circuit ruled yesterday the ban did not violate the Second Amendment's rights to bear arms because semi-automatic rifles like the AR-15 are military-style weapons designed for sustained combat operations. Lawyers, of course, are going to argue that point from now on. And that's what's happening.
Yeah, I know all of my Army friends would love to go into battle with a semi-automatic AR-15. Listen.